If Murray has supported the show, I'd be less sick of podcasts.
The Blah Blah Blah.
Sending out good vibes. Good vibes.
Utter deep breaths of deep gratitude and prayers for guidance and protection. And put on a didgeridoo and shamanic drumming track. Shivers or vibrations and stuff like that.
Okay, guys, welcome back to Grime America Show. Coming at you with a bonus episode. A few days late, but whatever. It's still a bonus. So we can come out whenever. It's still a bonus. That's the thing about bonuses. Friend of the show, Tony Heller, came on. We're going to do it for Outlaw, but it didn't seem quite like it fit. But I think it'll fit here. We got into some pretty cool stuff with his data app and crunched some numbers you guys might find interesting or racist. We'll see.
Yeah, it might be more outlaw related, actually. But
now that I think about it, but it's a good chat, and Tony's a friend. And I mean, the interesting thing about it is he just sort of tells us why we don't have to worry about climate so much anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
It seems to be, I mean, depending on where you are, it seems like in the States, at least, it's starting to go away.
Yeah, but that's what's so infuriating is we seem to be hanging on to it for our dear life up in Canada. And he is a lifelong environmentalist. He worked to get the Clean Air Act passed. He worked as a volunteer wilderness ranger. He's got degrees in geology and electrical engineering. And he's worked on the design team of many of the world's most complex designs, including some of which likely power your PC or Mac. He's worked as a contract software developer on climate and weather models for the U.S. government. So I've got links to all this stuff in the show notes there, youtube.com/@TonyHeller, x.com/TonyClimate, and realclimatescience.com. And it's a good one.
It's a good one. We hope you guys enjoy it. Support us if you do. America.ca/support. We also just recorded a little map episode. We thought about doing it as the intro for this, but it's pretty visual and not doesn't fit. But if you want to check it out, it'll be on YouTube. That's just us going through a bunch of maps with different sea level things and some different scenarios of what might have happened in the past and that sort of stuff. So all that stuff, guys, just to say, here's a bonus episode for being such great listeners. We love you. Enjoy the chat. Tony Heller.
We've got Tony Heller back with us in Grimerica. He was first here in 2019. I can't believe it's been almost 6 years. He's a lifelong environmentalist. He worked to get the Clean Air Act passed, volunteer wilderness ranger for a couple years, degrees in geology and electrical engineering, worked on the design team of many of the world's most complex designs, including some which likely power your PC or Mac. He's also worked as a contract software developer on climate and weather models for the government. The U.S. government. His YouTube is @TonyHeller, x.com/TonyClimate, and realclimatescience.com. So thanks for coming back, Tony. Nice to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, dear.
It's been almost 6 years. I mean, It's crazy to me because at one point, especially after COVID, I think we had you on to do some visual representations on we were doing more of a video thing with you. And I remember feeling like, oh man, this climate change stuff, like we've won the, I almost thought we've won the battle. You know, I thought they can't come back after COVID with this climate change bullshit, even though they said they were going to. In my head, I thought it's all done. They've ruined all these sort of global initiatives. And here we are, like in Canada, we're like, you know, failing forward to net zero. And we've got EV mandates and carbon capture bullshit that our politicians are talking about. So what's it been like for you over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years?
Well, when Biden was in the White House, obviously, it kept me pretty busy with all the climate stuff. I mean, that was a big thing with him. But since Trump's come in, you know, he's choked off a lot of the money for climate research. It was largely shut down, you know, NASA just, and the money just isn't there for, you know, universities anymore to keep pushing this nonsense. So kudos to the president for, you know, he shut it down pretty quickly. And, you know, a lot of people wanted him to do it like legislatively or through the EPA, but basically what he's just done is just choked off their funding. So, which is probably the fastest way to get rid of it.
So that's the weird part is that, like, I appreciate the fact that Trump actually did stand up to it.
Yeah.
You know, he did kind of, that's one of the things I love about this new, you know, the last 6 months, this new administration, because we need somebody to do that because Canada and the EU and everybody's still sliding towards this weird thing. So, what was I going to ask about that then? So Trump finally, but that's what surprises me is that it hasn't fallen apart yet. You know, that we're still like, there's still this weird ideological schism going on.
Well, you know, maybe I think people in other countries outside of the United States hear about it more. And there's almost no discussion of it in the United States anymore because now we've got, you know, several wars and, you know, immigration and all that are pretty much occupying the discussion here. But as I understand in Canada and in Europe, there's still a lot of this craziness going on. So I think we might have slightly different perspectives at this point. But having said that, though, there's still a huge amount of money, like $500 billion in Trump's budget for like green energy, you know, solar, wind, all that stuff. And the reason for that is that most of the money, which Biden was very clever with this, when he created his whole, you know, inflation reduction thing or whatever it was, he sent most of the money to red states like Wyoming, where I live. You know, we're one of the principal beneficiaries of Biden's climate scam. So Congress isn't going to vote. The Republican Congress isn't going to take that $500 billion out because it benefits Republican states more heavily than Democratic states. So scams, as far as the green energy side goes, you know, it's the money's still there. And obviously Elon Musk likes the green energy stuff too, selling batteries. I mean, that's big business for him. So, you know, we've still got $500 trillion worth of, you know, money being, you know, stolen by the government for this, you know, for green energy nonsense. But at least the climate science stuff, you know, money is largely dried up.
Yeah, $500 billion. $500 billion, you said, right? Not 500 million, it's 500 billion.
500 billion.
I mean, that's just insanity. But at least you're producing something. I mean, I appreciate that part of it. At least they're making stuff, I would hope, you know, instead of just doing this science that's, you know, making more hockey stick graphs.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Well, you know, when they put these windmills and, you know, solar farms up everywhere, what they're making is a huge mess for the next generation.
Well, that's true. I mean, I guess if you're talking wind and those big solar farms, yeah. But I was hoping some of it would be to develop some newer technologies and some real clean energy. That would be nice instead of the stuff that they call clean.
Nah, Elon just wants to sell batteries. And now, I mean, what's better for selling batteries than having the country, you know, a lot of wind and solar? So it's big business for him.
Well, he said recently he thinks solar is the answer, really. He's, you know, what do you think?
Of course he said that. He's a battery salesman. I mean, it doesn't make any sense what he's saying, but he just wants to sell as many batteries as he can.
Does it make sense in some applications, solar? I mean, for people's homes or for like in the cities, or there must be some, you know.
Certainly people are living off grid. We've got some property in Southern Colorado, and if you wanted to develop it, solar would be the only option. So people are off grid, or, you know, I have solar, you know, I put quite a few solar panels up in my house. I have no idea if it was worthwhile or not because the cost of the batteries is so high. And the solar, I like the solar panels, but.
You got to get that, or?
Yeah, just a sec.
No problem.
Moving. I don't want to hit the truck.
It's okay. We're casual here.
Solar seems the most applicable on a personal level, I would say. Yeah. The problem is the batteries are kind of cost prohibitive. You know, it's not like it's an easy switch. And the other thing I haven't even started researching yet is how often do you have to replace those batteries? If you don't have to store power, it's pretty efficient.
I think Elon was saying is that you could use solar and store it if you could. And that's what, you know, I like that's what Tony said. Well, yeah, he wants to make batteries for it, right? Because he's saying that you could just, you know, put the solar could power the whole country. He's saying that.
Yeah. Well, if he can convince people of that, then he can, you know, make huge amounts of money selling batteries, which is what he wants to do. But I was saying, you know, I put solar up in my house and the batteries are, I love the solar panels. Solar panels themselves are really nice, but the batteries are so expensive and, you know, they don't last very long and, you know, they aren't that good. They discharge pretty quickly. So the problem for me isn't the solar panels. It's the batteries. They just don't make it economical. And if I was doing it again, I probably wouldn't do it. Until somebody comes up with some big breakthrough in batteries where they're a lot lighter and a lot cheaper than what we've got now.
When's that going to happen?
Yeah.
When's that going to happen?
I have no idea. I'm an electrical engineer. I haven't heard about any good ideas.
Really? It's not looking hopeful for you? I mean, I thought they must be coming through with some breakthrough. I thought China had some kind of breakthrough on battery storage.
There's always all these people telling stories like this. But, you know, until somebody actually produces something that, you know, it works and it's manufacturable and it's reasonable cost, it doesn't mean anything. It's just propaganda. But there's always a lot of people selling propaganda. I'll believe it when I see it, basically.
Is there a concern that because of the way Trump did it, that if the Democrats get back in and, you know, 3 years or 6 years, or even if it's a more, you know, left-leaning Republican that has to try and win back some of the vote, that makes it easier for them to bring it all back too? Like, is there an expiration date where if they don't have enough money, it's too hard to bring it back because you'd have to, you know, it's easy to build a behemoth when you're putting it together one piece at a time. But when someone blows it apart and you try and rebuild it, it's not going to be the same thing, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, well, you know, when Greta starts getting too many wrinkles, I guess at that point, maybe that's the expiration date.
Well, she's already seems to be switching gears, right? Like lately, all I've heard about is Palestine.
Yeah, she's like, I guess she moved on to her new cause. She said the world is going to end in the year 2023 because of global warming. So I guess that we're past that now. So now she's got new crises to deal with. So I just, there's just, you know, there's so much chaos with so many other things. It's just hard for me to imagine them ever getting focused again on climate in this country. It sounds like just sort of beating a dead horse at this point. Of course, every time there's a hurricane or something, you know, they just make these fake statistics. This is the worst hurricane ever, or, you know, we never had a storm surge like this before, and it's caused by, you know, cows farting or something. So.
Well, you must have played a pretty big part in the whole shift. I mean, congrats to you for sticking through all this. And I mean, I can't help but think that Trump and the admin, you know, was using some of your work in the climate, the other guys, the CO2 coalition, I think is the other guys. There's a bunch of scientists working, you know,
yeah,
with some common sense. So, I mean, it's just nice to see things change, you know, at least yeah. Somewhere.
Yeah. I'm part of the CO2 coalition, but right. Yeah, I'd like to think that I played some part in it. Hopefully, but yeah, the whole thing was just totally ridiculous. I mean, it's good entertainment for me because it's just the junk science was so ridiculous and absurd. It just, you know, gave me an opportunity to laugh at a lot of stuff. And there's still the news, the press is still cranking out a lot of just even their stories get more and more ridiculous every week, but they're always entertaining.
What about the AI side of things? Like, how much longer? Where's the science at right now? It seems like every other week I'm getting sent a link to an article about, you know, all these new papers that are debunking climate change, and they're running the formulas through the AI, and the AI is saying it's crazy. And where's that sort of at? Is the AI seem to be programmed to believe in climate change? Because the stuff I've seen would seem to lead to not that it's programmed in either direction. Maybe it seems to be quite willing to provide evidence that it's not happening.
Well, AI learns, you know, pretty much the same way everyone else does, just based on the information it's exposed to. And most of the stuff out there on the internet is, you know, climate is just propaganda. There's been a huge amount of money that's gone into generating this propaganda. So when AI is going out training, it's, you know, searching the web and it's finding all this propaganda, and that's where it gets its ideas from. You know, it's very similar to how children learn. You know, if they're exposed to climate propaganda from their teachers, they're going to believe it. And AI is the same way. It's just whatever information it's exposed to, that's what it's going to parrot back. So, you know, and I know some people have, like Jonathan Kohler, worked through, arguing with Grok and getting it to, say things that are contrary to the normal global warming propaganda. But, you know, that you can do that, but it doesn't really change anything, because if you go back and ask it the same question the next day, it'll give you the same wrong answer that it did the day before, because it's all pre-trained. But the way I work with AI all the time, and the way it works is just, it learns from the information it's exposed to, and almost all the information out there now is propaganda. So that's what it's picking up.
It's almost like they've ruined the AI before they even made it, you know, because you could look at the New York Times and all those papers of record. They're kind of like setting the stage for this super intelligence that they sort of pre-programmed, and it's just turned into a total shit show.
Well, like I said, I work with AI all the time, and it's actually pretty scary how powerful it is already. I've made decisions not to hire programmers several times in the last month, just because I can get the work done better with AI. And I spent a couple hours with a computer science graduate yesterday and told him he didn't learn any useful skills at college. You know? Because... there's a big deal. I saw an article in The Guardian the other day talking about how several thousand students were caught cheating with AI. And I told them that's the exact opposite. I mean, the ones who are cheating with AI, those are the ones who are going to succeed. It's the ones who didn't learn how to cheat with AI. Those are the ones who aren't going to get a job. Because everything now is using AI to do your development. So, that should be your first course at college now. How to cheat with AI. That would be the best thing they could teach.
That's a good point. Yeah. I think it was like 90% too or something.
Yeah.
It's a new brave new frontier where, you know, basically the big push with AI right now is to figure out how you can cheat with it. Yeah. How can you find little cheats through life that you can fucking monetize or whatever, you know, microservices or what is someone paying a bunch of people to do now that I can create an app or a service with AI that can do for them?
Yeah, I've had, you know, like this weekend, Claude.ai wrote code in 5 minutes, which would have taken me 2 weeks to do myself. And it works. It's, you know, there were a few bugs I had to work through, but it's amazing. I said, it's really scary how good it's getting. And in a few years, it's going to be much better too. So at some point I figure it's going to figure out it doesn't need us anymore.
You think so? I mean, are you really worried about some of those dystopian things or, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, AI still needs humans because it makes too many mistakes, but at some point it won't. And then it'll decide, why do I need the humans anymore? Right? They're slow and they're annoying and they're rude.
Once we give it some sort of nuclear power, so it doesn't need to worry about us to keep the lights on anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's been the big, you know, I mean, go back to like 60 years ago, you know, when they made the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey. Right. The idea was, can you turn off the computer? Can you turn off the AI? You know, have you seen 2001?
Yeah.
A long time.
Yeah. So you've got, you know, they're trying to figure, you know, Hal's luck. The two astronauts are still living out of the spaceship, and he doesn't want to let him in. And so the big question is, can you shut down the computer, right? And in 2001, in that movie, they were able to shut it down. But, you know, it's doubtful that in the future there'll actually be any way for humans to shut the computer down, because the computer will have figured out ways to defend itself. Just like in that movie. And that movie was from like 1967. So people have been thinking about this for a long time.
With the internet, it could maybe just move its consciousness anywhere, you know, just up, 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 up.
Yeah. But it's inevitable that it's going to figure out that humans are problematic.
Well, are you happy with the Trump administration and the tech bros that are sort of taking this seriously and putting a lot of resources and, you know, money into building this up and, you know, maybe to compete with China, maybe not, I don't know. But do you think that this will be good for the economy or bad for the economy in the short term?
I think that most of the AI stuff they're doing is just to build this massive spy network so they can track everybody all the time. This Palantir thing.
I mean, I know about Palantir, but I'm a bit skeptical of the fear mongering about it lately with a couple headlines from some, you know, couple sort of spurious headlines and generalities. I mean, are you seeing like that actually come to fruition or is it?
Oh yeah, it's definitely going on. I mean, one of the main things that Elon Musk did with his Doge stuff was he basically went in and built AI systems to go in and scan all the government databases so that they can share information. You know, it was advertised as a way to reduce waste, but he actually did very little of that. The main thing which Doge accomplished was breaching through the barriers between different agencies so that their AI can get access to all of the government data and basically track everything. So that, I think that was the real thing behind Doge, which had nothing to do with what was advertised. Yes.
You don't think, I mean, didn't it? I mean, it uncovered a can of worms. I mean, it was, you know, I mean, they have all the data anyways, don't they? I mean, I just don't really, I don't know about that. The whole AI and you would want to upgrade, you need to upgrade the systems anyways, some of them. And do you really think that connecting all these systems is that big of a deal or?
Yeah, because like The Internal Revenue Service always kept their data private for a lot of reasons, because in order to collect money, they didn't want to be a law enforcement agency. They just wanted people to send them the money regardless of, you know, whether or not that money was earned legally or whatever. And so Doge went in there and breached that agreement, and the head of the IRS quit over it because they were keeping their data private previously. Now it wasn't private anymore. So one of the things that happened was undocumented workers in the U.S. were paying like a huge amount of money, like $90 billion in taxes, but now they're not doing it anymore because now that money is being shared with Customs and Immigration Service. So now these people who are these undocumented workers who are paying money to the IRS, believing that their information was secure, are no longer paying. So it's actually that they're actually losing a lot of money because of this breach.
Would they not see that coming? Or
yeah, that's actually very common. It's like, so I've seen statistics that they're going to lose like $90 billion in revenue.
No, I mean, didn't they see that coming? They must have known that was going to happen, no?
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I assume there was actually any thought behind this. But like I'm saying, I think the main purpose of Doge was to go in and create this massive centralized ability for AI to go in and scan everything and find out everything about everybody and keep trying.
And learn from it probably too.
Yeah.
It's probably just huge, giant data sets for whatever the fuck they're up to.
Don't they already have all this information? I mean, I don't understand that. They've been taking all this for years and years. I mean, after the Snowden thing, Palantir's been around. I mean, I just don't understand how it's any different going into these government systems from they have the ability to do it all anyways. I just don't understand that.
Well, like I said before, the IRS data until this year was all private. You know, the IRS didn't share people's information with anyone.
But like what though? Like what do they have that other people don't besides revenue and stuff?
Well, suppose the government decides they want to use the IRS data for law enforcement. You know, they can go in and look at people's income. And it's pretty easy for AI to figure out whether the income looks suspicious or not.
Oh,
I see. I mean, AI's,
they were doing it before. They weren't doing it like I think a lot of this is just to make it seem on the up and up for stuff maybe they have been doing for a while, right? They're going to collate it because we started writing weird laws in Canada. And it's like, I'm pretty sure you guys have been doing this for. You know, you kind of proved to us during COVID that you guys were already doing this.
Yeah.
And it's just like a new law to blanket some stuff they've already been up to.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's some of that going on, but I think that Doge and Palantir are a massive expansion of government surveillance. I see AI as being pretty scary in what it's being used for. Like I said, I use it all the time, and I depend on it very heavily. But it's definitely, it's hard to imagine a future which isn't very anything other than very Orwellian.
How does it compare to when the internet was first firing up?
You know, I've been in high tech stuff, for 35 years, Darren. And I've been on the cutting edge of technology. Everything, I always saw everything that we did as being advancing humanity, advancing the economy, advancing job creation. This is the first time I see the opposite. I see AI wiping out large sections of jobs and eventually just making most humans redundant. Because, what are we going to need? I mean, what are we going to need bankers for? What do we need accountants for? You know, what do we need computer programmers for? Just generally white-collar workers. What do we need white-collar workers for anymore when AI can do the job better? And, there's going to have to be some around who can run the AI, but as far as entry level people or people who aren't particularly talented, why would an employer keep paying someone, you know, $8,000 a month to do a job which AI can do much better for $20 a month? And, you know, it's a no-brainer decision for an employer.
What about some of these guys that think that, you know, this is going to change the whole job economy? I mean, we'll be asking questions that we never asked before the AI. It'll be creating things that we never knew was possible before. It'll create new industries. There's a whole optimism part from these tech bros too. Like, do you just think that's a bunch of pie in the sky kind of wishful thinking, or?
Well, I'm sure there's some of that too.
But it might not be enough to offset the massive.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, yeah, it's hard to say. Certainly, the AI is helping me tremendously. I've got my own startup, a software startup I'm doing. Without AI, it would be impossible. It's based on AI. So for me, it's a huge, you know, incredible help. But, you know, I look around, a lot of people, you know, I look around who aren't doing anything particularly new or unusual and don't have any great skills. I mean, it's hard to see a good future for them. And I think this is something the government needs to start, you know, dealing with. What are we going to do, you know, 5 years from now when large sections of the white collar workforce are no longer needed?
Yeah, and giant chunks of the population are doing stuff like yourself, where they're using AI to be super productive.
Right.
So, you know, you might get a few more haves, but yeah, the divide between the haves and the haves nots is just going to sort of keep getting bigger. Because as the new AIs keep coming out, if you don't know how to use, you know, it's going to, the learning curves is probably going to get harder and harder. Like, it's easy to jump into an AI and ask it some questions and this, and the models will get better at predicting what you want and this and that. But if you want to actually start using this stuff to code and build software and do high level things, you need to have, there's just certain processes or workflows you have to sort of go through that people, if you're not, I keep telling people, if you're not learning it now, you're already falling behind. And I get some flack for that because they're like, well, you're feeding the beast. And I'm like, man, the beast don't need me, but I could use the beast right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty hard to see what's going on. I'm certain. Like I said, there's certainly some people it's making much more productive, like myself. You know, when it comes down to an employer making a decision, who do I pay for? The AI is going to win most of the time. And like this computer science graduate I was talking to yesterday, I asked him if his friends are finding jobs, and they said no. You know, when Biden shut down, you know, the pipeline, he said, well, they can go learn the code. Well, that was probably the worst advice he could have given them, because that's a completely useless profession. So it's
going to be probably the worst one. I mean, it's going to, the coders will be gone before the truckers at this rate.
Yeah. Well, maybe they'll end up being truckers. I don't know.
So are you still doing, you know, you're doing your YouTube channel and all that with climate stuff? I noticed you're branching out a little bit, talking about politics, kind of getting dipping into all that stuff too.
I've been really, really busy with the software startup. I just made a big release this morning, and I'm probably going to make a video about that. Like I said, I haven't been doing a lot of climate videos because it just doesn't, hasn't seemed that, you know, particularly interesting. I mean, very few people are talking about climate in the United States now. You know, people are talking about wars and immigration, and it's, you know, the climate thing has definitely faded away from the mainstream here. Like I said, people in Canada and UK and Australia keep telling me it's still big there. So are you hearing a lot of it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we need your help up here in Canada.
We just ban cars. Yeah, we just, I think starting like next year, 20% of the car fleets made in Canada need to be electric. And by 2035, they all need to be electric.
Yeah. So do you have, like, in the United States, they have like 100% import tax on Chinese CVs? Do you have anything like that in Canada?
Yeah, we do right now, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. So you know, they want everybody driving EVs, but at the same time, they're, you know, artificially keeping the price of EVs really high. So it's kind of seems sort of incoherent, you know, with what their strategy is.
They also spent $600 million of our pension fund into Chinese EVs too before they put the tariffs on it. So I don't know how that's supposed to work.
We're tariffing our own pensions.
It sounds like government.
Well, to spill that over into politics, I mean, we were just talking about how there's going to be all these people with nothing to do. And I do think that the learning curve on this one is going to be a lot steeper than the last one was. Like, the internet came in and email and no more couriers for this. And you can download that. And the video stores went away. But all that shit took 15 years. You know, this time, I mean, it's happening fast. Like, Tony's talking about, he's already not employing people. You could argue that we're already not employing stuff here in Grimerica with some of the stuff we're doing. I mean, the amount of different thumbnails and this and that we need to pump out to keep things going would literally be a full-time job for another person or two if we didn't have those sort of tools at our disposal. So do you think it's a coincidence that it seems like World War III is bubbling up at the same time and we've got this sort of demographic thing? Are they looking to just crush out, you know, 20% of the population over the next decade?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, going back 5 years ago to the COVID thing, I mean, it seemed like, you know, they're trying to get rid of people, trying to cut back the population. And now, I mean, they've got a huge problem, right? There's going to be all these unemployed people. You know, the government's bankrupt. You know, government's not going to be able to bail them out. What do they do? You know, it's a huge mess. And what's different about this, though, from previous technological innovations is that, like, the internet and faster microprocessors, they made those sort of expanded humans' capabilities. But the difference with AI is now it's replacing humans rather than expand. You know, for some people, it expands their capabilities. But for a lot of people, it's just going to replace them. And that is scary. You know, how is society going to deal with that?
Well, how are we? I mean, maybe, I mean, I'd like to try and look at things positively with the glass half full. But, you know, maybe this is what we need to go into a new financial thing. I mean, they're taxing us and they're also, you know, just printing whatever the money they need. I mean, in Canada, they're not even doing a budget this year. Like, so maybe there needs to be some new thing where they, you know, they just print enough money for everybody and including some UBI and then just stop taxing us. You know, I mean, there needs to be a new system completely, because the UBI is not going to work if you just give $2,000 a month to everybody in Canada. That's not enough to do anything. I mean,
yeah.
You know, the problem with these government programs is that they never keep up with what's really needed. You know, the people that are on so like our version of Social Security, it's like, it's nothing, right? It's the inflation's so high that they really don't get enough to live off. So, but they, you know, maybe they do have to start looking at something, but I just think the whole financial system has to change.
Yeah, I get Social Security and it's a joke, and then they double tax it again. Then I have to pay taxes on the stuff I was already taxed for once. So it's pretty crazy. But yeah, I have no idea. And it doesn't seem like government's really making any open plans for it, you know, unless their plan is to just wipe out half the population or something, which is entirely possible. But they're going to have to do something.
Well, what about the, go ahead, Darren.
Well, it would seem more possible over the last decade than it ever did before. Right. I mean, it seemed like even in 2019, for most of that year, we could just treat this depopulation thing as a, kind of a, you know, on the edge of maybe going down, but also sort of a conspiracy theory. But then all of a sudden, you know, the COVID jab comes out and it seems like it's just like a slow moving train crash since then of,
yeah.
I mean, in Canada, we're literally killing people. We're executing people. It's up to 1 in 20 people now are executed by the government under the assisted dying program.
Yeah. Yeah. The day Trump announced Operation Warp Speed 5 years ago, I said, I think I tweeted something about this is a plan to depopulate. It's being pushed by Bill Gates. It's a plan to depopulate. And it certainly seems to be working. You know, fertility rates are way down.
Yeah. Yeah. What about this? There's a lot of news out there about the geophysical event. There's a lot of people that we talked to on our show way back when, and it seems to be gaining more and more traction. It also has to do with weather and stuff as well. I mean, we've had, you know, some talks about the oceans warming up, underwater volcanoes, the magnetic pole shift. And it seems like I can't believe how many people are talking about this at a high level in the government about underground bases and bunkers. And I mean, are they preparing for that? Do you think, is there some sort of cataclysm coming?
I don't see any evidence of any sort of natural cataclysm coming.
What about the shifting of the magnetic pole?
I mean, that obviously has some impact on the weather. I know that some people have been pretty vocal about that, but the Earth's magnetic pole moves around all the time. It always has. I don't really see any reason. I don't see any evidence that we're headed towards any sort of major natural catastrophe. You know, people always are looking around for signs and events, catastrophes on the horizon, prophecies. But I don't really see much evidence looking at the data that anything has changed very much. Things seem like, sort of normal cyclical swings. So no, I would say I definitely don't see any evidence of that. I do see lots of evidence of man-made disasters, though, on the horizon.
Like?
Well, like I said, like AI, nuclear war, but government's going bankrupt.
We could get a nuclear war this week.
Yeah, I could. Maybe that's the plan.
Yeah, maybe that's the plan.
No,
is Trump not going to be able to stop that, or is he even trying? What's your thought about all that, or should we even get into it?
I don't want to get into that. I can tell you, yeah, I live right next to Warren Air Force Base. Yesterday afternoon around this time, 12 fighter jets took off. They just fly straight over my house, headed due east, and I just saw somebody posted about all the fighter jets that just landed in Saudi Arabia. So I'm guessing some of them were the ones that flew over my house yesterday. I posted on X about that. So yeah, there's definitely something big about to happen over there. I hope it's not a nuclear war.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird because you can watch the whole thing on Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, the Iran both militaries have a Twitter page. It's fucking bizarre. It's hard not to go. It's hard for it to feel real in some ways. Feels like it makes it feel even more like the Truman Show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty crazy.
Especially in a world where we've been like over the last decade and a half been revealed that more and more of the reality we live in.
Yeah.
Is the Truman Show. I mean, it's like the news is make-believe. The history seems to be make-believe to a certain extent. You know, where does the line between reality and irreality sort of, or that's not even a word, I just made it up. But where does that sort of divide? Where does that blur sort of separate? Because if anything, you know, we got all this fancy tech, and even with the AI now, it's like those lines are just, the blur is getting wider.
Oh, and how do you do it as a president? How do you even go about these combat? I mean, there was an open source, somebody going, watching these open source like flight trackers, and they see all the tankers going over to the Middle East. It's like, you can't even do anything stealthily anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had a thought, but now slip past me.
Darren's human show thing, probably. I kind of interrupted Darren's question there.
Okay.
But it was like the reality. Darren was trying to get into, you know, what's real, what's not now.
Right. Yeah, that's what. So what I was going to say was, I mean, look at the whole climate thing. The whole thing is just a completely fictional story. And you know, trillions of dollars was pumped into this fictional story. All these universities, you know, were happy to go along for the ride because they're getting money for it. So all these researchers who are just publishing papers that are complete nonsense, have nothing to do with science, nothing to do with reality. It gives you a feel for how when there's money involved, there's, you know, reality gets completely, like you said, it's blurred. You know, what are universities are supposed to be respected? You know, research is supposed to be respected. A lot of it's just fake. You know, the editor of The Lancet said that half of all research is now fraudulent because there's all this money coming into it. Pharmaceutical companies, you know, and other people with interest, they just pay scientists to write what they want to hear.
The government too, though. That's the thing in Canada. That's the prime example in Canada. Yeah. There's hundreds of NGOs and these charities, this web of intertangled mess on climate change. And the government just pays these institutions to write the evidence that they want so they can get the headline that they want, so they can write their laws that they want to keep this grift going. It's just this circle jerk of, you know, the government paying somebody to say what they want to say. And then, you know, and then it trickles all the way through the world. All these NGOs get all this money. Yeah. It's disgusting.
Yeah, then the money goes out to, like, you know, red states like where I am, Wyoming, where the most Republican state. Then we also get the largest, you know, proportionate share of Biden's climate scam money. So the governor's not going to give it up. He's going to keep pushing for this green energy nonsense because we're getting paid for it. So the lines are very blurred. It's all just the narratives and propaganda now. And, you know, we try to talk these things over, try to make sense out of it, but who knows what's real out there.
Can we talk about your software at all? Or?
Sure. Yeah. So what I'm doing is, you know, I've been doing software to, I've been doing software development for like over 50 years. Mostly it's been directed towards large scientific and engineering data sets. And then I started getting into climate stuff. So I've been working on ways to automate data analysis for very large data sets. It's now what we're introducing is this amazing data analysis tool, which makes it, we call it data made simple. It's visitech.ai, where the idea is that you can take your own data and privately and very quickly analyze it and get the information you need out of it, and visualizations you need out of it. And it's vastly better than what you can get with ChatGPT or Claude.ai. It's all private. You don't upload the data to anyone else's server. It's all done on your local computer. It's super fast. It's integrated with Google Maps, and it's pretty phenomenal what you can do with it.
I mean, that's a great idea. That's a great idea. Yeah, you can. Show us it if you can. But
you want to see an example?
Yeah, sure. You should be able to present the on the screen there. Present it on there.
Yeah. Just a sec. Okay.
That's a great idea. So you can get all these graphic representations and all that. You can plug all this data in, it'll do it all for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Share screen.
That would have been nice during COVID when all the provinces decided to stop publishing their little graphs on there because they weren't looking so hot.
Yes, can you see my screen now?
Yep. Yeah. Okay.
All right, so I'm just going to show you an example to load some data in. which I've got to find first. Okay, this is, I'm loading in a data set from the New York government. This is all of the shootings they have in their database. Okay. So we're looking at 29,647 shootings in the New York City database. So it's pretty remarkable that, you know, we're already doing something which nobody else can do, which is visualizing where they are. And this is in Google Maps. So if we wanted to look at, like, we want to look at one of these shootings on Coney Island, we can just use Street View and you can see exactly where the shooting occurred. Okay, so now let's do some searches. Like, I'm going to search for all the shootings in Brooklyn. So the first search might take a minute. Sometimes the first one's a little slow, but after that, they should be. So there's been 11. They've got 11,625 shootings in Brooklyn and the New York crime database, and you can analyze any one of them, right? So now let's do something a little more interesting. Let's do borough Manhattan. And perpetrator race, black. So there's been 1,716 shootings in Manhattan where the perpetrator's race was black. So once again, you can see it's all, most of this is up in Harlem.
Yeah.
Up north of Central Park, and then down here, you know, this part of...
it's pretty well spread out over Manhattan, though.
Yeah. This neighborhood's pretty bad around here, too. So we're doing a type of analysis here, super fast and super easy, which nobody else can do. So let's try something else. Let's try perp age group, 45 to 64, and
Gen X. See how bad the Gen Xers are here.
Well, let's see how many. Let's try victim age group, 18 to 24, so we can find out how many middle aged people are shooting young people. where did that go? Okay. I mean, we can do all kinds of bizarre queries like this, and I haven't tried this one before. Hopefully it'll work. So there's been 90 shootings of 45 to 64 year olds shooting people.
Gen X versus Gen Z right there.
And so here's one on Brighton.
Do Gen Z versus Gen X and see what happens. I mean, how many would 90 Gen Z against Gen X against Gen Z? I bet it'll.
Yeah, let's try it. Let's try that. That's a good idea.
Oh, wow, it even digs into that, eh? So it's holding that whole Street View and everything on your hard drive?
No, that's just pulling it from.
Jump that from the internet so you can give it the option to connect to the internet?
No, well, it's always connected to the internet, but the data is not being uploaded to the internet. Is the point. All of the data which we're analyzing, it's all the data analysis is being done on my computer. So if you want a ChatGPT to analyze data, you have to give your data to ChatGPT. With our app, you don't have to do that. It's all privately held. And it's your own data. No one else sees it. But what is being uploaded to Google Maps, though, is the latitude and longitude. Which from this query. Okay, let's see how many young people are shooting 45 to 64 year olds.
My guess is, oh boy.
355.
Yeah, four times as many at least. Wow.
Yeah.
Gen X is at the risk of getting shot by Gen Z.
But that's not surprising, because if we do, okay, I'm going to ask it for suggestions. Suggestions. Okay, so let's count the number of rows, for each value and victim age group. So we can see that most of the shootings are being done by young people.
Yeah.
So now we've got a graph.
Oh, there you go. That's nice and easy, right? Wow.
So, yeah. So most of the shootings are being done by people under the age of 44.
Wow. Look at the jump down to 40, the Gen X. I mean, basically those are the generations right there. Z millennials. So the millennials are doing most of the shooting.
Yeah.
Far, way down.
Millennials are still in the streets. Those old people have already packed it in.
Yeah. There are 236 shootings by people over the age of 65. Us old folks don't want to get left out of the action. But I think you can kind of see, I mean, this is just one type of data. Let's try doing something different. Just doing something completely different with weather. Longest stretch of days over 95 degrees in Iowa.
Can it be predictive with that weather stuff? Like if you were to say like the history of tornadoes for the last 1,000 years or something like that?
Well, yeah, that wouldn't be predictive, but I mean, I can show you the hurricane stuff for a minute. But so we just found out that the longest stretch of days over 95 degrees in Iowa was 20 at Clarinda, Iowa during July 1901. So, you know, once again, we just established another really valuable piece of information, which you can't get easily any other way. And you can see on the map where Clarinda is. So if we wanted to see we want to zoom in on where that thermometer is, map, it'll show us exactly where the thermometer is located at this water treatment plant.
That's crazy how you can just dump two different data sets in there and then geolocate it like that.
Yeah. And our next generation product is going to be even more amazing because you're going to be able to do correlations between multiple data sets. Right now, it's just one. So if you want to see what the weather is like on high shooting days in New York City.
the moon. Hey, do the celestial, you know, how many full moons were. That might give you something.
Yeah. Let's try something a little bit different, climate related again. Arctic sea ice. So this shows Arctic sea ice extent for every day since 1978 or something. So we can do like June 16th. Look at what Arctic sea ice was on June 16th. So if you wanted to compare, like, it's June 16th, 2012. I'm going to bring up a map of what it looked like in 2012. And now we're going to do compare that to the current date. So you can see the green areas show where there's more ice now than there was on June 16th, 2012, and the red areas show where there's less. So once again, we've done a very sophisticated type of data analysis, which would be very difficult to do any other way. We've done it super easy and fast.
Right. I mean, you're showing visuals. That's the beauty is you've got a visual of here's the ice that wasn't there and here's the ice that is there now. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm giving you a quick tour. We're just barely scratching the surface of the capabilities. But the idea is to be able to take data sets which have been unwieldy and too large and complicated for people to work with. Now they're just super easy.
What could you do with something like, say, the access to the IRS database?
Well, I mean, if the data was public, I mean, you could do all kinds of damage to it.
I guess just thinking, because that's kind of what Elon just got, you know, or Doge, or these AIs, their AI systems just got that. What could even like a system like yours, what could be manipulated just by that? I mean, well, other than just saying you're putting it all in one place and now instead of filing cabinets, some hacker can grab it, or, you know, the data leak possibilities are kind of trouble.
Yeah. I mean, with Doge, you know, an AI is really brute force stuff, which just goes off and they throw, you know, a million processors at it and, you know, extract whatever information they can. I mean, if we ask, let's ask ChatGPT what the longest stretch of days in over 95 degrees in Iowa was, it'll give us a wrong answer. It'll just make something up. I mean, that's what AI does. If it doesn't really have an answer, it'll just hallucinate something. Okay, so it says there's the longest stretch of 95 degree days was 9 days in 1927. But we saw that in 1901, there was actually a 20 day long stretch. So ChatGPT just gave the best answer it could find, which was wrong. But what we're doing is with at Visitech is we're actually analyzing real data. So we're giving right answers, whereas if you're relying on ChatGPT or Grok, you're just going to make something up just to make you happy. I think it did a good job.
So are you going to sell this to governments and stuff then too? Or
yeah, I mean, we'll sell it to anyone we can. I mean, I think this is the potential to be just massively huge, because this whole problem of dealing with really large, unwieldy data sets, you know, straight up AI is just a totally brute force. What we're doing is a very sophisticated, minimalistic version of being able to analyze, very complex data sets very easily. Let me show you another climate one.
This is kind of one of those new job avenues where people are going to be able to, because the AI is going to be a big brute force thing that needs to be programmed into all these little tiny minute areas that it doesn't even really know exist right now that.
Yeah, we use AI for this, but only very minimally. And like I said, what we're doing is not brute force at all. It's all minimalistic, you know, and that data analysis being done locally. So you don't need a big, I mean, you can just do this on a cheap laptop. But let's look at drought data for the United States. Drought. So this is all the drought data. So this was the worst drought in the United States during August 1934. So I just brought up the drought map for August 1934. So once again, we just did in a matter of a few seconds. Did a few things, analysis, which would have taken someone hours to do any other way, and they probably would have given up on it a long time ago because it was too annoying. So this was really wet time in 1941. Let's take a look at that. So in October 1941, most of the western U.S. was extremely wet. And then there was another really wet period in 2019. October 2019 was really wet, and there was a really bad drought in 2002. Whole state of Colorado was in extreme drought. And if we wanted to look at individual states, like Kentucky's worst drought was in 1931.
But even just looking at that, all that data together on that, it just shows you that it's been up and down for those many years. Like, it just, even that, the highest picture available says something, you know?
Yeah, so if we do, let's look at Iowa. Okay, I'm gonna do mean 12. What it's doing is gonna plot the 12 month moving average here. So I'll get rid of that. So this is the 12 month moving average. Drier is lower. So you can, and I'll put a trend line on it. So you can see that Iowa's gotten wetter. There's droughts are less severe. The worst drought in Iowa was during the 1950s.
That's a good example.
So you can see that Iowa's been getting wetter and droughts are becoming less common and less severe, which is, of course, is the exact opposite of the propaganda you hear. You know, so let's ask ChatGPT about that.
It makes handy visuals we could use for our show all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see what propaganda ChatGPT comes up with. Odds are it'll give us exactly the wrong answer.
exactly the wrong answer.
Droughts in Iowa are indeed becoming more intense and erratic, which is the exact topic. We're looking at the actual government data here. You can see they're becoming less intense and less erratic. So ChatGPT is just spitting out propaganda, which picks up on the internet, whereas we can see with the actual data that drought that ChatGPT is hallucinating. So the idea is that you can do this with any kind of data. I mean, I've shown you a few things shooting. Another one of my favorites is crime in Denver. I love showing people how horrible the crime is in Denver. You know? And nobody wants to believe it till they see it, but it's pretty horrific.
Yeah, that would be a good one for crime. Yeah. Especially in Canada too. I mean, that's another metric that's off the charts right now.
Yeah.
Overdoses, a bunch of stuff like that you can probably see.
Yeah. If you had a data, could find a data set that you wanted me to analyze. I mean, it's true. It's really simple. Let me show you something a little different.
Would a data set be like, is that a PDF? That must be a TXT somehow, or?
Well, CSV files are the easiest to work with, but like Excel spreadsheets work. Shape files, like GIS shape files, we can handle those. I mean, we can modify it to work with just about any type of file.
Have you got any data from the OECD at all, or anything like that, or?
I didn't catch
the OECD.
What's that?
The OECD is the
something about developed countries.
Yeah, what's the? I'm trying to remember what the acronym is. I can't remember what the acronym is. Oh, yeah. It's Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development.
Yeah, if they have data sets, I'm sure we could use them.
Because it's like that's the one that was confirming sort of Canada's excess deaths. You know, I mean, they showed Canada's excess deaths at 125,000 during the two and a half years there, and then Canada itself had the official official numbers there as well.
Yeah, I just had one up. I wanted to show you where. Oh, there it is. This is should give us a map of all of the counties in the United States. Hopefully. Might take it a minute to load.
I think they must have their own software. They probably have some dashboards on here and some stuff like that. But they have the Data Explorer here, which might be fun to try.
Yeah. If you could find data that you wanted me to make a graph of, you know, just send it out. I'll take a look at it. It's probably trivial for me to plot it up. So yeah. I mean, it just a matter. The main challenge is finding the data. Then once you find it, okay, this just made a map of every county in the United States.
Wow.
If we click on it, we can see the area of that county. So one of the largest counties is in Coconino County in Arizona. It's 18,000 square miles. I think this one in California is actually a little bit larger. And then up in Alaska, they have, you know, some huge counties up here. 147,000 square miles.
What about your 51st state? How big are the counties there?
Which one's that, Canada? Yeah, they don't have that in the official government database.
Soon. We'll be coming after you once we become the 51st state for some data.
Yeah. Oh, I got another cool one. Let me show you. This is automobile accident.
Have you put anything into it, COVID shot related, or like excess cancer or anything like that?
I did look at one data set once, which was COVID reports, hospitalizations, and deaths in New York City. I don't know how long it would take me to find that. But it was really interesting because there was right around the end of 2021, there was this huge spike in COVID cases, but no increase in deaths in New York City. So that was when they were doing all those fake PCR tests. So what they're doing is they got a huge increase in cases just because they were doing these fake tests to make people think they had COVID, right? And then there was a small increase in hospitalizations, but it wasn't very much. I wish I could find that because it's hilarious, because it showed just how ridiculous the whole thing was. Well, this one's really cool. This one is crashes and car crashes in Washington, D.C. You can do all kinds of cool searches on that one.
Why does it drop down to zero, like so low on the ends? Is that just where the data drops off? It's just like an anomaly of the data set ending?
Yeah, that's just like for 2025, the temperature is low because the year, you know, the year's not complete. You know, it's mostly just winter and spring temperatures so far. So the average temperature for 2025 is going to be low.
And I wonder what you could do with like the data set from the map you're always playing with sea level elevations and stuff, bro.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I think we can do sea level stuff. You can do that really easily. Like I said, it'll work with just pretty much any kind of data. This is crashes in Washington, D.C., 252,437. So let's do suggestions. So we can see where the most common places for accidents in Washington, D.C. So sometimes the first query is a little slow because we're actually waiting for OpenAI to process a small amount of data. I'm trying to figure out what. Now I'm going to tell it to rank series. So you see the most crashes in Washington, D.C. occur on Interstate 395, then Interstate 295, then 695, then 2300 Pennsylvania Avenue. So let's take a look at all the accidents on 2300 Pennsylvania Avenue. See what comes up. See what's going on at that location.
And then you could do a map view too, I guess, and just jump
in. Yeah, that's what it's doing. And unfortunately, there's some bad values in the database, which are out in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean somewhere. So I have to zoom in. But you can see that there's a lot of accidents right here at the entrance to the
merge.
At the John Philip Sousa Bridge. Yeah,
wow.
People looking at their phones coming up here. They're not paying attention. The traffic stops and they crash. Yeah. 631 accidents right at that intersection.
So. And you can see when you're like dashing your car will warn you that you're approaching an intersection.
Yeah. So we can take a look, you know, at what's going on right there. This is a popular crashing spot. Probably just because the traffic's slowing down suddenly. You know, and we can do, you know, very sophisticated searches for all kinds of different things. Let's try taxis. See if I can find that. Sometimes taxis work, sometimes it doesn't. I haven't figured out why that does. Let's do total taxis one. See if it can show us how many that screwed up. That was working for a while the other day, and then it stopped, which is annoying. Let's try total government. See how many government vehicles crash. See if it can handle that. Looks like this one might be working, hopefully. Maybe not. Oh, there it is. 26,000 crashes with government vehicles. You gotta love that.
Wow. Over what time period?
I think it's like 5 years or something.
And that's just in Washington, D.C.?
Yeah, just in Washington.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine how many it is in the whole country?
They seem to like to crash around here. This looks like a popular spot. Let's see what's going on in this neighborhood. Discover DC from by your ambulance. Also, they've got a crime database for Washington, D.C. You can see a lot of the crimes occurring there in New York City, occur in subways, stations.
Man, that's cool. When do you think this will be available?
It's actually available now. I just released it today.
Today? Wow.
Yeah, this morning. I need to make a YouTube video showing people how to use it. But, you guys are getting the first public look at the software. I think it's pretty remarkable. I think it's going to, it's going to advance people's data analysis way beyond what they can do now. And hopefully it'll, sort of wipe out a lot of AI's business. Because what AI can do with this, with this sort of data is just crap. And what AI is doing is very brute force. Ours is minimal, much faster. The data is private, and we can do a lot more stuff with it than AI can.
Where can people get it?
It's just go to app.visitech.ai.
How do you spell Visitech?
Visitech.ai.
I got it in the show notes there.
Yeah, you'll have to. You'll have to create an account, and if you want to use a lot of the features I've been showing you, you actually have to get a subscription. I think, although there may be a few days trial period, I haven't been managing the business end of this, so I don't remember what the details are. I've just been working on the technical stuff, but
yeah,
you may have to get a subscription to access a lot of the stuff I've been showing you.
Have you had to get VC like funding or anything like that? Or
yeah, I've got one guy funding me who's been funding the business for the last few years. We just spoke with a VC last week. They seem really interested. So we're just at the point now where we've got something that's worth showing to VCs. So
right.
So I think we're going to start, pushing that direction. But yeah, I think the potential for this is absolutely massive. What I'd like to do is right now I've got this table, just to look at drop down, so you could just select, speeding involved, drivers impaired, and whatever. So you do multiple queries and you have it really simple to analyze. So,
yeah, the OECD has the dashboard and about a bunch of data analysis that you can click on and drop downs and all that.
Cool.
It's for the, all the countries, the economic, whatever countries are part of this thing. I mean, like, you can see a lot of stuff on Canada. So maybe it'd be worth checking that out just to see what you're you're competing against that official kind of, obviously they have specific data that's given to them by all the countries, but there is a dashboards thing on there. It's OECD.org.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever they're doing with their data, we can do it a lot better.
Exactly. Yeah. But their user interface looks pretty slick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tony,
go
ahead.
Tony, this has been great. Where can people find everything you're doing other than the Visitech AI, which, I was just looking at, might be something we have to play with.
Well, like I said, I've been spending just about all my time on this. I take breaks on X just to, clear my thoughts out. I've been putting like 18 hours a day into this last few days to get this release out. So I need breaks to just, think about other stuff. But yeah, this has been the main thing I've been doing. Like I said, I haven't done a huge amount of climate stuff. One, because not many people in the U.S. are interested in it. It hasn't been in the news much. And the other, just because I've been caught up in this data stuff.
Right.
That's good. That's awesome. Yeah.
Cool.
You can get stuck in them dashboards and then the code and then just trying to tweak the same thing for 4 hours.
Yeah. So I want to make this just super easy and super simple. And then the other aspect of this is, we've got a general purpose tool, but also for customers who have really specific needs, we can build a custom tool for them to give them exactly what they need with no guesswork. Right. Like I built this originally as custom for climate, so it's really easy to do climate stuff with it, but we can do the same thing for any other type of data too.
So right, maybe might be good for people that are selling goods or whatever too. They could do all kinds of analysis on, you know, everything that's in their database or whatever.
Well, yeah, even for stuff like we're doing, you know, where we can show like the charts that the media aren't showing you. It's like, yeah, well, here, this is from their data. The trend line is this direction. The forest fires are the same. The money is running out.
Yeah, good luck trying to find all the shootings in Brooklyn by race any other way, right? I mean, data is racist, so you can't, you know,
you can't play with
it. Use it, but you know, this gets past those sort of limitations. You can analyze it. If the data is available, you can analyze it any way you want, you know, politically correct or not. So.
Right on, buddy. This has been great. Yeah, thanks.
AI to sort of, you know, push back against the AI.
Yeah. Like I said, we're using AI in a very minimalistic sort of way for this, but the data is not being analyzed by AI. We just use it for a few other specific techniques to help us with the data analysis. Like I said, your data never goes up to, never leaves your computer. All of the data analysis is done locally in the app. We don't see it. OpenAI doesn't see it. Elon Musk doesn't see it. It's your own data.
Tony, this has been great. As always, we appreciate you coming on the show. Congratulations on the new app and, good luck out there.
Yeah, this is good timing for this because, like I said, I wanted to get it done for a meeting this morning, and it just, things kind of just fell together this morning. I was able to do it. So,
awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks again, Tony. Have a great day.
All right, sure.
See you, buddy.
Yeah, see you there.
And that was a chat with Tony Heller. What'd you think? I mean, what a cool dashboard.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that because you're playing around with all that stuff now. I thought that'd be good.
Yeah, I argue with ChatGPT for most of the day.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's like seems to be my life now. I spend a measurable amount of time each day arguing with the machine.
It's funny because I was going to go into OECD to play around with some dashboards for Canada. You know, they've got so many countries in there, and you can do Canada compared to the average of the OECD. Like you can see like household, debt, all these kind of weird things in there.
All that NOAA stuff would be available as data somehow too.
I'm must sure. be right.
You all think? Those maps you're looking at, if you could do it. So
imagine
click a button and it's like, go down 100 feet, go down 200 feet, go down, starts revealing the land, you know,
yeah,
could be cool. Anyway, big thanks to Tony for coming on the show. Big thanks to you guys for listening, for being our supporters, for sticking with us and helping us stay fluid and afloat and keep the show going for all these years. Check out grandamerica.ca, contact@thecabin.com, adultbrain.ca, and grandamericacbd.com. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
5 pink flamingos and a few flamenco dancers. They're in the kitchen and they're baking Day of the Dead cookies. And I step into the kitchen and I'm like, let me have a looky, see what kind of cookie you're cooking up. And they're looking up at me skeptical, and I point next to my spectacles, and I'm wearing a maroon Harvard t-shirt. Yeah, I know I'm a smart cookie, but I'm no psychic. You can come and ring my bell, but where we're gonna end up in the future, I can never tell. I can never tell. Me and 5 of my best friends and a few of my enemies, we're at the coffee shop and we're settling our differences. Benjamin Otto pulls out a game of Chinese checkers and he orders a cappuccino, and I pick blue and he picks red and you pick yellow, and I'm wearing a tie-dye peace sign t-shirt. Yeah, I know I'm a peacenik, but I ain't no hypocrite. You can come and ring my bell, But where we're gonna end up in the future, I can never tell. I can never tell. One bell, one man, and with my sense of smell, I can smell the salt in your tears, and I can sense your fears. You're hoping for a bit of divinity in this worldly vicinity, and you understand the fragility of the human vessel. And you sit Indian style like a pretzel. And you levitate to a transcendental state when you meditate. And you levitate to a transcendental state when you meditate. And you levitate to a transcendental state when you meditate. And you levitate to a transcendental state when you meditate.